Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome. Our guests tonight are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet and Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News. Alaska had a primary election on Tuesday, and this is going to be an election show. Paul, let's start with you. Shocker. Joe Miller upsets Lisa Murkowski, or does he? What happened?
I don't know if you can say he upset her. I guess he did where the vote stands right now. He started off as a veritable unknown in this campaign.
And if I might, we should say this: as of Friday midday, he's ahead by about
1,668 is what he's ahead now. He started off as a virtual unknown. He's got Sarah Palin's backing, Mike Huckabee's backing, Tea Party Express backing. What started an ad blitz in the last few weeks of the campaign and surged, I think, surprising Murkowski and everyone else, that when the numbers were counted, he was right there. I think everybody expected a wider margin than it wound up. But right where we stand right now, as we said, he's 1668 ahead. There's 20,896 votes left to count. 11,266 are absentee, and 89,72 are question ballots, and 658 early votes haven't been counted. There's a lot of room in there for her to make up 1,600 votes, I think. But the amazing thing is how he surged, I think. The amazing part about this whole election was how he surged and her missteps that put her in that position.
So how did he do it, Joe Miller?
Let me count the ways. Well, first of all, he ran a pretty good campaign. He started off, as Paul said, he was an unknown. He did the right thing. He started off with a spot that said, basically introduced himself to the voters. He said that he was a judge, a lawyer, a decorated military veteran. So he's got an impressive resume.
West Point.
So he's that struck a chord, I think, with a lot of folks. And then he started running issue ads. And then the Tea Party money really rolled in, as Paul said, the last couple of weeks. And it was just this huge blitz. It was a negative attack on Lisa Murkowski's
record. And we should note for the viewers that the Tea Party money were independent expenditures by law.
Yes.
The Miller people couldn't spend them. And there's a lot of confusion about what was the Miller campaign and what was the Tea Party, but excuse me.
But what they pointed out, their message to the voters were that Lisa Murkowski is much more liberal than she lets on to be. She sided with the Democrats 300 times rather than the Republican Party, voted for Obamacare, all those kinds of things.
The evil Eric Holder.
Right, and there is so much. And the repetition was so fierce, it was a message that obviously stuck with enough voters. Then there are a couple of other issues out there, too. You had Proposition 2, which generally is going to bring out a more conservative voter. That was the parental consent question on teens getting an abortion. So that brought a lot of folks out to the polls who might not have been maybe hadn't planned on going out to vote. So he had that element behind him as well. And then you have to point out, too, that Lisa Murkowski really, in my opinion, did not run a good campaign at all. For instance, we interviewed Chuck Todd, who is a political analyst with NBC News on Wednesday. He said that all of the Republican incumbents were told by the Republican National Party that if you're running against a Tea Party candidate, you have to expect this last two-week blitz that you're going to get hammered on. You can't rest on your laurels. You have to go well ahead of that, and you have to basically define your opponent as being someone who's unfit for office. You have to keep talking about how you are fit for office and be ready to attack back. And the only person who really took that advice to heart was John McCain down in Arizona. And we asked Lisa Murkowski about this. She said, no, I'm very proud of the fact that we ran a very positive campaign, and Alaskans would rather see a positive campaign. But that's not the kind of campaign that was being waged against her. It was something that really attacked her record. So it was a combination good campaign run by Miller and the Tea Party and not a very good campaign run by Lisa
Murkowski.
And we
need to talk about something else. Let's stick with you just for a minute, Steve, mm-hmm. and then we'll get Paul back in here. The national media called a number of times, called me a number of times, and wanted to know what's going on, an update and so forth. And what they wanted to talk about, Sarah Palin. Tell us about Sarah Palin.
Well, she endorsed him early on.
Joe Miller.
And she didn't come up here or anything to campaign for him. She wasn't very visible, but certainly she was on his campaign ads. And I think that, it probably had an impact. Yeah, it certainly legitimized him in the eyes of many conservatives and Tea Party advocates. So I think it helped him, yeah. I don't think it was a major factor, I don't think. Like I said, I think all of those issues taken together, it was a perfect storm in Miller's favor.
And many of us got robocalls from Sarah Palin, but yes. I don't think those were very important. People had many, many good reasons to vote for Joe Miller as this campaign, the people who did vote for Joe Miller. Paul, one of the things that really stood out to me is how well Miller did in the Mat-Su Valley. He got something like 3,500, almost 3,600 votes more than Palin. That would seem to be ground zero if you're a Republican, right?
I think so. In this state, it's also, Murkowski was caught up in an anti-incumbent wave that was sweeping the country. I don't think what he did was as important as what she did not do during this campaign.
Yeah.
I think if he'd have run that same campaign against Elisa Murkowski that came out the first day swinging and had campaigned like she was behind from day one, I think there'd be a whole different set of numbers up there.
Yeah. Steve, I was going to suggest to you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I didn't want to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Okay.
Well, I was just going to say, if you think back 6 years ago, what did we hear from Lisa Murkowski and Ted Stevens at the time during the campaign against Tony Knowles was, Lisa Murkowski already has 2 years of experience. Right. She started off here on the pecking order in terms of seniority in the U.S. Senate. Now, just in 2 short years, she's up this high. Well, now she's one of the leading, one of the leaders of the Republican Party in the United States Senate.
Close to Mitch McConnell.
Don't think we heard that at all, or heard it very little. We heard how important seniority was to Alaska when you've got a three-person delegation in Congress. Didn't hear any of that kind of talk this time around.
A lot of that, though, now is being rejected from places like the Valley. They don't like seniority. They don't like her. Her record, for instance, on abortion has become so muddied over the past 3 or 4 weeks that people think she's for paying for government-paid abortion. She's not. But they'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. And it's astounding to me. She had an ad from Senator Ted Stevens that he cut for her before he died. Mm-hmm. And family said, please use it. And she wouldn't do it because she didn't want to hurt the family. How much impact would that have had?
Steve, I think she turned, or rather Miller turned her into Tony Knowles, a liberal who was going to vote for liberals and support Obama.
Right.
This is an incredible trick. Don't you think she needed somebody, maybe Stevens was going to play this role, but she needed somebody like Mitch McConnell to come out and say the minority leader. Listen, I'm going to tell you about Lisa Murkowski. People are saying she's not a conservative. That's not true.
Oh, I think so. I think you needed another another voice to come up from the lower 48 and to campaign for her. But again, she allowed Miller to define her. And she did nothing really to fight back.
Okay, we could devote the whole show to Murkowski and Miller, but we can't. Paul, let's turn to the Democrats and to the Democratic nominee, Scott McAdams. What happens for him next?
I think this is going to be an interesting time for him and his lieutenant governor candidate. It depends in large part for him on what happens when they count these 20,000 votes. If Lisa Murkowski becomes the GOP standard bearer in this race, he can put together a credible campaign and go against her and let the chips fall where they may. I don't think anybody would expect him to beat her in this state. I mean, we're 80% conservatives here. Even if we're mad at Lisa for whatever, they're probably going to vote for her. On the other hand, if it's Miller, who the Democrats between now and the election are going to demonize as a far right-wing crazy person, then maybe you can do something with that candidacy. Maybe they ask him to step out. Maybe they put in a replacement and then make a fight of it. It's all about where these numbers fall. September 8th, I guess, was when we'll know the final numbers.
Okay, and Steve, just briefly, what would your assessment be of a three-person race?
Gosh, it would be great to cover.
And don't
it
you think it's
really interesting to cover? Well, I think what happens is if, you know...
This proves, despite what people say, the media is not so much liberal as just in love with a good story.
That's it. That's all it is. It is a good story. It's been a great story. It's been a lot of fun. You know, I know there's some people who are, you know, chewing their fingernails off their elbows right now. But if Lisa Murkowski comes on the short end of this vote and decides that she's going to mount a write-in campaign or perhaps jump to another ticket and become the libertarian candidate, so to speak, that's a possibility that's been raised. I think she and Miller kill each other off. In some regards, and if Scott McAdams can wage a good strong campaign, boy,
for him
he's
it would be the
good.
Tortoise and the hare.
Oh yeah,
I'm your neighbor here. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a show horse, but I'm a responsible Alaskan. Yeah. I fish and hunt. And
yeah,
you sit
there.
Gun rights.
Those two guys are psycho. Yeah.
He sat in an assembly meeting the night of the election.
Yeah, is that
okay?
Yeah.
As much fun as we're having, we have to move on to the governor's race, and let's start with Steve. Steve, the Republican primary. What happened in the governor's race?
Well, I think it came out pretty much as everybody expected. Parnell had been the front runner right from the start, and he ran a good campaign. If you're the incumbent and the front runner, you stay out of the line of sight of the other people who are running against you. He did that, much to the chagrin of Ralph Samuels and Bill Walker. Did everything. He ran on his record. He's been in office for a year, taking over, of course, for Sarah Palin when she quit. And he had some successes in that year. He calmed things down. It was a breath of fresh air from all the craziness that was going on when the Palin administration was in office. And I think people liked that, and that is what got him to the top of the heap early on, and he just stayed there. So I think it ended the way everybody thought it would
end. And don't you think what this showed is people were mad at Washington. They weren't mad at incumbents. If Lisa Murkowski loses, she'll be the only incumbent who lost.
Yeah.
The whole ballot.
That's true. And usually it's sort of, and the attitude on that is usually, not to go back to the congressional races, but it's like, we hate Congress. They're crazy and they're dysfunctional. But we like our Congress people.
Well, some of the same people who voted for Miller because he's against earmarks and wasteful federal spending voted for Don Young.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Let's let Paul tell us about what happened to Ralph Samuels.
It's the schizophrenia, I tell you. Go to Washington, cut spending. Not my spending.
Not our spending. Not in our backyard.
Wasteful spending.
Yeah. Wasteful spending, which is everybody else's.
Somebody else's wasting the money.
I don't know. I liked his message. I wondered about his adherence to the small bore pipeline business. Mm-hmm. I got the impression that he wasn't forceful enough, that maybe he brought... We talked before the show, bad news, and people don't want to hear bad news.
He said that himself.
Now, yes,
I just think that all of that plays into this. And then you've got Bill Walker, who started off, I think, in this campaign kind of in the middle. But towards the end, he started sounding like a governor. And I think that helped him, and I think that hurt Samuel. I had them both on for 2 hours on a radio show. And of the two, I mean, they both were good in my mind, but Walker was clearly the better of the two in his position. They were both very angry about Parnell refusing to debate him and spent some time berating him. But
and perhaps the key to Walker was the fact that Paul Jenkins endorsed him.
I'm a kingmaker.
or a runner-up maker. Yeah. Is that what you want to be? Okay.
Yeah, ask Lisa Murkowski.
Let's get back to Steve McDonald. Steve, the Democrats, Ethan Berkowitz prevails in a spirited race.
Yeah, he did. You knew that wasn't going to get nasty because he and Hollis French are colleagues and they're good friends. So everything was kind of any criticism that was leveled at the other was like, "Oh, my good friend Hollis or my good friend Ethan did this." You know, so it was all kept above board. They didn't really slug it out at all. But Ethan Berkowitz probably has better name recognition. He's run a couple of statewide campaigns now, so I think he's better known in the villages. And I think that helped him in this race. It was a good, solid 7-point win for Ethan over Hollis French.
Paul, it would seem to me, especially if we have a 3-person U.S. Senate race at the top of the ticket, it's just going to suck all the air out of the governor's race.
I think it probably is going to anyway.
But even if it's a two-person race?
Even if it's a two-person race. The governor's race is, what's it going to be about? What are the main issues? I mean, we're going to talk about the gas pipeline, and gee, why won't you tell us what the thing is? Mm-hmm. We're talk about the economy. We're going to talk about the regular stuff. Over in the Senate race, they're going to kill each other. So it's going to be...
Well, Parnell has called himself a glass half empty, glass half full kind of guy, you know, the level-headed guy at the tiller, and Berkowitz is going to have to show people I'm even better at...
Well, I think what Berkowitz can do, he's already offered a different way of negotiating with oil companies on oil field leases. The best thing that's going to happen to him is Tony Knowles being very open to business and very open to dealing with the oil industry and very open to moving Alaska ahead. I think he can make that case. I can do that same thing.
So do you think that he can go to oil company forums and be more appealing than Parnell?
Oh, yeah. If he says, I hate ACEs, you
bet. He's going to say, well, I don't know if he says this.
He doesn't support ACEs. But yeah. I think if he goes, he's going to be seen as the guy that may be able to do something about ACEs. He'll be tops in their book.
Go ahead.
Leadership, I think, is also going to be an issue. We heard right off the bat on election night that Ethan Berkowitz just said that Sean Parnell is not an effective leader, and he can be a more effective leader. So I think that's going to be one of the issues that gets framed here very, very early on. Sean Parnell has had a reputation of being very milquetoast-like, not very dynamic. I think he has done a very good job of putting some energy in his delivery, and he has become more dynamic in this
particular
race.
Well, he would say, you know, and his friends would say in his defense or his allies, mm-hmm. he's responsible and disciplined.
Right, and which is exactly what I think a lot of Alaskans felt the state needed after Sarah Palin.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's turn to the lieutenant governor's race and stick with Steve. Many of us were shocked again, and there's a good question on why the pundits are shocked, but I don't think there's anybody expected Meade Treadwell to roll up Jay Rammers the way he did.
No, I talked to a couple of pollsters the day or two before Election Day, and everybody thought Jay Rammers would win this thing. Better name recognition. Meade got into the race a little late.
Those ads for his business.
Right. Oh, yeah. And plus the fact he's been in the legislature. He's been a fairly high-profile member of the state legislature for years now. So it was a surprise to see Meade Treadwell win. It was a surprise to see Meade Treadwell win by as many votes as he did. It was a trouncing by Alaska standards. So, it was quite the win for Meade Treadwell.
Yeah, very interesting. Paul, any thoughts on the Republican race, and then walk us through what happens with the Democrats?
Well,
this is in the lieutenant governor's race.
So every time you start to lose faith in the electoral process, then somebody like Treadwell pops up and really deserves to win and does, and you got to go, yeah, all right. So that's for the Republicans anyway. On the Democratic side, Jacob Kern.
Jacob Kern. Yeah. No, you're talking about Powers.
Jack Powers. He came in second place behind Diane Benson.
Well, see, I don't know anything.
Oh, yes, you do.
Well, push on irregardless, as we'd say at my house. Benson, why do you know about her?
I read that wrong. Well, Benson is a former candidate against Don Young. She's well-known in the art community and the university community. She's a pretty well-known Democrat. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot of support among the Democrats. She and Berkowitz, I guess, have butted heads a few times, but have made their peace. So we'll see how that works.
Steve, let's return to Meade Treadwell for a while. He did have some real assets. He'd been associated for a long time, both publicly and in the public mind, with Wally Hickel.
Yep, Governor Hickel.
He's an articulate, smart guy. He's presents well, and he ran hard. He must have raised some money, right?
He must have. Yeah, I quite frankly, don't
didn't
know.
Didn't see the latest report.
Didn't see the latest report, but he had very effective media, started out with his kids. And again, we didn't, we in the media, we knew Meade. We've known Meade for quite a while now. But for folks out there who maybe didn't know Meade Treadwell, it was a great introductory spot that, here I am, here's who I am, here's my family, here are my kids. And they kind of introduced him, and it was a good lighthearted ad. It was just a great way to start off a campaign. And then he got into more issues later on down the road.
And I think it's fair to say Jay Rammers really struggled with the gravitas question, if you want to put it that way. I mean, there was something about him that comes across as the kid.
Yeah, and I...
Some people like that, but I think there's some people who didn't.
His ad was igniting Alaska's economy, and you got the little special effects kind of thing that went through there. You know, it was eye-catching and all that,
Several people told me his yard signs or street signs looked like paintball splatter because of the colors he's chosen.
Yeah.
We better turn to the legislative races here in Anchorage. Paul, can you give us some general comments, an overview on what happened here in Anchorage, besides it was a good day for incumbents?
A great day for incumbents, and a lot of people ran unopposed. Yeah. Very few people turn out for primaries, really. I mean, we get the numbers. So how it'll turn out in the end, we don't know. But you have guys like, who? Name somebody.
Here in the Anchorage area,
Mike Dugan was running for re-election.
They're running for re-election, right.
And Sharice Millett, but she won. Craig Johnson, there were many incumbents who did well.
Okay, there was a couple races that kind of stand out. We had Kathy Giesel managed to do okay.
This is in the South Anchorage.
Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is she beat Jennifer Johnson, an Anchorage Assemblywoman, who I don't know if this is an early warning sign for people on the Assembly or what it is. When I saw them on your program, Giesel was clearly superior when it comes to delivery on television.
Well, and also people will select you or choose you for one office, and they may not be crazy about you for
the other. Right. And another one, Bill Cook, an unknown, showed up in Eagle River. I mean, we're not even sure.
You know, Paul, the thing that most interesting about that Eagle River race is the few votes it took to get nominated. It's in the low hundreds, right?
It doesn't take much. That's right. 200 or 300, I think.
Yeah, and that's something we saw all over Anchorage.
That was like Dan Sadler and a few. Yeah.
Is the variation in the turnout. Yes. The Giesel race, there was a high turnout. Of course, it was competitive, but it's in a higher income area. And then there are parts of Alaska where, you know, it was around 20%.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, it just the number of people on the ballot. I think it also depends. There are a lot of folks out hunting right now. It depends on what the priorities are. It's tough to get a good turnout in a primary in Alaska in August. We'll see a different turnout, I think, certainly in November. But in the big urban areas where there's a lot of media, you're going to just see a higher turnout here. South Anchorage, you said it's always a strong turnout in South Anchorage precincts.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things about a turnout, there were some precincts in Fairbanks where it was very good, and Joe Miller took all the legislative districts in Fairbanks. That really surprised me. It wasn't that he could take Fairbanks. People had suggested that earlier and suggested that to me.
Right, right.
But that he would be able to do it the way he did.
Yeah.
It was really quite surprising.
Yeah.
One more thing here while we have a couple of minutes left. Going back to our friend Sarah Palin, our former governor, the national media thinks this has big meaning for the national stage. You want to give it a try, Steve?
I just think there were far more powerful forces at work here than Sarah Palin. Had she come up and did some stumping with Miller, maybe we could put it in a different light. But she came out. She made these robocalls. She was a face on some of his ads. But I think there were just some larger forces at work than just Sarah Palin right there. She hadn't been doing all that well in other states. Part of it is she backed some strong candidates, and some candidates weren't very strong and were probably not likely to win. But she still backed them, feeling that they were the person to.
Well, in a way, it seems kind of odd to me that she essentially helped him with her name, and she really helped him with the Tea Party connection.
Right.
But I don't know. It seems like traditionally you'd see them on the stump together or her on television saying, you know, you really need Joe Miller.
Yeah.
He represents.
Yeah, there wasn't even an ad, not even a radio ad that I heard, that I was aware of. So, yeah, I do think there was, I'm sure she helped. I'm sure she did. I just don't think that she helped to the degree, where it really matters much in her resume in the lower 48. Now, how much credit she'll claim, that's another thought.
Paul, I'm curious here. In some ways, it seems that the Miller phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon, is reminiscent of the Palin phenomenon. Candidate who comes from nowhere, sets the woods on fire, and has devoted followers and acolytes. What do you think?
I've talked about this with several people over the past week or so. She's a phenomenon. I don't think that he's going to measure up to that.
It's the beard, right?
It's the beard. Guys with beards do okay. You know, that's what I'm telling you. He needs to commit to the beard or get rid of it, but that's the other thing. Anyway, no, she is just a celebrity. I don't think his star is going to be as bright, but it is amazing that he's come out of nowhere. And I say, it's not so much for what he did as the missteps of his opponent.
But, Steve, couldn't you see that for some voters on television or in person, he would have charisma?
Oh, sure. Again, go back to his resume. It's a great resume. He's done a lot of good things. He's been very successful. He speaks well. He looks fine.
You know, he really has a beautiful radio voice.
Yeah,
that's where I was.
No, I think he's a complete candidate. Is he the type of, does he have the kind of stuff that one would think could knock off a sitting U.S. senator? No way, no day. I just think that there are special forces at work here that just the planets aligned and this is what happened. He had a base that was incredibly motivated to get out and vote, and it did.
Speaking of get out, you just said the magic word. The duck is coming down. We're going to have to get out because we don't have any time left for Anchorage Edition. Thank you for joining us. We'll know a lot more about the Senate race next week. See you right here. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.